Social, Andy. Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. This is episode 196 with Animesh and Peter from the Horns Up Podcast, straight out of Bombay, India. But before we kick in, you guys know, my name's Andy Dowling, but just in case you didn't, I host this little podcast and I also play bass in the Australian metal band Lord. If you love a bit of old school heavy metal, go and check out our brand new album, Fallen Idols. It is out now. It debuted at number 20 in the Australian ARIA charts. It debuted at number 2 in the Australian independent charts. It is going crazy. So don't believe me, believe the charts. Go and buy the album over at lord.net.au. You can go and check out the back catalogue there. All of our video clips are out. Actually, speaking of which, we just released a video clip for the second single off Fallen Idols called Kill or Be Killed. So you would have seen the first video for United, Welcome Back. Second track now is Kill or Be Killed, and we will continue to do more video clips over the coming months. So lots and lots to come. But go and check all that stuff out. Go and listen to the album. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, all that usual stuff, and share it around. Thank you very much. And I won't keep crapping on because we're going to talk about the album a fair bit in this chat. Now, including all this, I also host the Self-Starter Podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. If you know someone who needs a kick up the ass, or you need a little bit of inspiration, or just want to see what other people are up to, you're a bit of a sticky beak, go over to selfstarter.com.au, check it all out. There's heaps of great case studies and lots of great stuff from season one, and we are in the midst of season two right now. It comes out every fortnight, 5 a.m. on a Monday morning. Great way to start your week. Go and check it all out over at selfstarter.com.au. Moving along, it's the shout-out section of this podcast, and most of you know by now, but every week I thank somebody that supports me and does lots of cool things for me in the podcast, and it could be stuff like buying some merchandise from the online store, it could be showing me a beer via the PayPal button over at andysocial.net, it could be a bit of social media love or a Facebook review or something like that. Whatever it is, it helps. It just keeps this whole thing going. And I mean, to be honest, I mean, the fact that anybody listens to this podcast is incredible. And the numbers each week keep going up and up. So, well, I don't know. I would say that I'm doing something right. But anyway, whatever. I'm overthinking this once again. But it's amazing that people even listen to this. So that alone is more than enough. But some of you guys go a little bit of an extra step further. And I just want to do something, even though it's very small, just to repay it just a little bit. So this week's shout out is for Neville Campbell Barker. And Neville is from Coventry. I've never heard of that place, but Coventry in the UK. And Neville left a Facebook recommendation on the Andy Social Facebook page. I think I've got, what is the web? What's the link? It's facebook.com/AndyDowlingOfficial. Oh, you are a wanker, Andy. Far out. Go and check it out anyway. I haven't had a Facebook recommendation in yonks, and Neville has obviously seen that it is starving on my Facebook page and needs starving. Yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this. I've had one beer and I'm off the rails. He's obviously seen that it's been a long time and there's some tumbleweeds flying across my Facebook page, and he's decided to leave a little recommendation, a little review for the podcast. So Neville's written, great interviewer with real and accurate insight with his hosts, highly recommended and thoroughly entertaining. So thank you very much, Neville. Neville is the man behind Fast Fingers Guitar Tuition and Repair in the UK. So any of my UK mates need a little bit of help and want to talk all things guitars, reach out to Neville. You can go to, you can find Fast Fingers Guitar Tuition and Repair on Facebook, or you can go to fastfingersgtr.co.uk, and I'm sure all the links and information will be over there. But Neville, thank you so much. I know that sometimes we get a little bit busy, and to spend an extra couple of minutes leaving a positive message anywhere on the internet is a hell of a task, and the fact that you've decided to do that for me is fantastic. So thank you very, very much. It's those little things that go a long way. So please reach out to me when you hear this. I am going to find some things, and to be honest, I think from previous episodes I've mentioned that I've been in the process of moving to Sydney. I am actually sitting in my new humble little place in Pyrmont, and I'm looking around, and I've actually found a lot of interesting things in the move, and I've got a box of stuff. So I've actually got an allocated area for rubbish that I'm going to send to all you kind folk that listen to the podcast. So Neville, reach out. I'm going to send out a little gift pack to you, just my way of saying thanks. It's the least that I could do. So thank you very much. Now, moving along, as you guys know, I have a section on my website. If you go to andysocial.net/buy stuff, it is a portal page, a landing page that has links to all the shit that I sell on the internet. There are links to the online stores for Lord and the podcast. There's an eBay store and Discog store as well. Go over there, check it out. If you're interested in picking up some music, so I've got a lot of friends that listen to the podcast that love collecting vinyl and CDs and cassettes and all that sort of stuff. I have a ton of stuff on Discogs that you can check out. Also on eBay, we have been decluttering, so there's a lot of odds and ends on eBay that you can check out. Music-related stuff, but a lot of other weird and wonderful things. I've got a lot of books on there. I've actually had to cull quite a bit off eBay and just get rid of it. So go and check it all out. There will be some new stuff that goes on there because I've found some more stuff that I need to put online in this recent move. But go over and have a look. And if you're having trouble accessing that page, flick me a DM on the socials and I will give you some direct links as well. But a few little thank yous, some additional thank yous for the people that support me via these platforms. We've got Gregory from Fredericton? Oh my God, in Canada. Sorry, Gregory. Mason from Cockburn Central in WA. It's spelled Cockburn, but I'm pretty sure they say Cockburn. Patricia from Footscray in Victoria. IC. I wonder what IC stands for. In Downer in ACT. Guys, I've said this before in the past. The ACT, Canberra, has some of the worst suburb names in the world. It is just absolutely atrocious, the names that they've devised. Is that the right word? Anyway, once again, I've had one beer and off the rails. They have some of the worst suburbs going, and Downer is just another example there. So if anyone's curious, especially people that probably aren't in Australia and have never really sort of looked into this, go and Google suburbs of Canberra and you'll see the dumbest names. I mean, case in point, Downer, but there's also Bruce and there's a bunch of other shit suburb names over there. So IC, no offense to where you live, mate. I'm sure it's a really lovely place and I don't mind Canberra. I think Canberra is fantastic in some particular pockets, but man, you guys have got some shit suburbs. Anyway, moving along, got slightly distracted there. Also, David from East Lakes in New South Wales, legend, that guy's spent thousands of dollars buying stuff off me. Glenn from Whittleton in WA. Again, thank you very much, Glenn. And Dylan from Norman Park in Queensland. Thank you very much, folks. Appreciate the support as always. Episode 195 this week is with Animesh and Peter from the Horns Up podcast, recorded and produced straight out of Bombay, India. Now, I've known Peter in particular for a few years indirectly, sort of on Facebook and whatever, and Animesh as well. I think I've been connected with him for a little bit, I think. But I've had this real interesting relationship with a lot of metal fans and the metal scene in India for well over a decade now. And over the years, I've done a bunch of different things, such as exchanging music, doing some CD trades with Indian bands, getting some Lord stuff over there. I brought Albatross out to Australia in 2012, I think. Oh, I can't remember now. And did a few shows over here, so I helped them out. And just had built some great friendships over there. So as for people that have been listening to the podcast for quite some time, I've had Riju from Albatross on the podcast. I've had Sahil from Demonic Resurrection. I've had Anuj, who is a pilot for Air India and a big metalhead that I've known, I think, since I was about 16 years old from the old Metal Rules forums. And am I missing somebody else? I don't know. But it's been fantastic, the friendships that I've built over the years. Some of these guys I've met in person. Some I have yet to actually meet in person, but just got some great connections. And India is one of those places that I haven't actually been to yet, but it feels like I've already visited because of these friendships that I've built over the years. So to talk to Animesh and Peter was fantastic. They've got their podcast. They asked me to jump on their podcast and talk about the new Lord album, and they quizzed me about some podcasting stuff, and just we had this really, really fun chat. They've got a really unique style of doing podcasts, and you can tell, I mean, most of these guys out there are really enthusiastic when it comes to metal. I mean, you listened last week to the chat that I did with Andrew Mackay Smith from Scars and Guitars. These guys are really passionate, but The Horns Up podcast is really, really cool, and you get to hear metal from the perspective of two guys who have grown up in India, live there, and are part of the metal scene, the metal world, and just listening to them talk about metal with their enthusiasm and passion is absolutely fantastic. So I really hope that you guys enjoy this. Yes, for anybody out there, I am cheating. The last couple of weeks I've been cheating. I've been reposting other people's podcasts as episodes. It's just been flat chat. A bit of context. I do have a number of things that are being recorded. I just haven't had time to do the appropriate edits and fix them all up. But the album has come out. We've just been wrapping up all the shows from the tour. I've just moved to Sydney, blah, blah, blah. I don't know why I'm making excuses for myself, but here we are. But I figured these chats were a lot of fun. I think some of you will get a kick out of it. You'll get to, I guess, hear me on the other side of the mic, so to speak, and learn a little bit more about the album. You'll hear some extra stories that maybe you haven't heard in the podcast, and you'll get to hear it with questions from people that you haven't probably heard from before in the past. And I would hope also, and I know I'm waffling, I'm checking myself right now, that you will check out the Horns Up podcast and subscribe to them. They're on Apple Podcasts, they're on Spotify, they're on all the usual places that you find podcasts. As with everybody that's been on the podcast previously, and they've got their own shows. So make sure you go and check them out, subscribe, and hopefully you enjoy all the other episodes that they've put out. They speak to lots of great metal musicians, a lot of guys in the extreme metal world. So if that sort of floats your boat, then it'll definitely be a podcast to check out. But really cool guys. I had a great time chatting to them. They've got a wicked sense of humor and just really, really enjoyed it. So enough waffling on from me. All the links will be in the show notes to check out these guys and how to subscribe and all that sort of stuff. But for now, please enjoy this fantastic chat that I got to have with Animesh and Peter from the Horns Up podcast based out of Bombay.
Our guest today wears many hats: musician, podcaster, gig promoter, social media guru, and then some. Welcome, Andy, from Lord.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for having me. I do wear a few hats.
And affectionately, I want to call you Lord Andy.
Lord. Oh, thank you very much. That's usually it's Tim that gets the Lord Tim all the time, so it's nice to have that at least for an hour anyway. So thanks, guys. I love the Lord Andy. I'll take it and run with it.
Yeah, we've been like wherever we've been doing, just talking to each other about setting this up or just sharing questions, etc. We've just been typing in Lord Andy everywhere, and it's hilarious.
I love it.
While we were discussing stuff, we realized that, you know what, it's been quite a hectic few weeks for you. I mean, I've been following your tour on social media across Australia, and it looked like great. Tell us what it was all about, man. How was it like playing those shows after all that planning, everything put together?
Oh man, like at the moment, I mean, you know, we're having these conversations and I'm doing a bit of press and everything, but it's so nice now to sit back and just sort of look back at what the last few weeks have been, because it's been crazy. I mean, as you said, we've just done this tour around Australia, and it didn't go to plan in the sense that we were going to release our brand new album, Fallen Idols. We were meant to release it earlier in the year. So I pretty much book everything for the band. So I'm booking the shows, the tour, everything. And so I thought, okay, so the album's going to come out, say, the end of April, and we're going to start touring in June. Okay, great. So I start booking everything, locking in all the venues, getting the bands, the promoters, everything. And then all these delays start happening. Nothing went to plan. And so suddenly the release date kept getting pushed back, and it was going to be the end of May. Then it was going to be June. And I thought, uh-oh, like, we're going to be doing a tour for our album that doesn't even exist. It's not even out yet. And the release date ended up getting pushed back to the 1st of August, which was a big stress for us. But we made it work. We made a decision to have the album ready for people at the shows, and we figured we'll let them have an early copy of the album so that people could buy the CD at the show, which people liked. And it was a lot of fun. It was we got to go around the country and play to a lot of old friends and meet a lot of new ones, and we sold a lot of merchandise, which is always good. It's always good for us, and it set us up really well for the launch date for the album. So it came out last week, and it's been fantastic. So a big build up, lots of running around. I feel like my head was cut off at one point just trying to work it all out, and I was about to have a mental breakdown, but it's worked out really well.
One testament of the fact how well the album is doing is the update I saw yesterday, which is Fallen Idols is number 20 on the Australian artists, so the ARIA, if I get it correct, the Australian artists album charts, and number 2 on the Australian independent music charts. So clearly you guys did a great job. My question is, has the album lived up to the expectations And what were your expectations in the first place to begin with?
Oh, that's a hard one, because I think what you have in your head and what you think something's going to be and what the final product is going to be is usually very different. It's like all of us, when we have an idea in our heads and then we actually start to try and attempt to do the idea, it never goes to plan. But we haven't released an album in 6 years. It's been a long time. But in between, we put out EPs, we've re-recorded old Dungeon songs, we put out box sets, we've done a live album, we've done heaps of stuff. But we hadn't done a studio album in 6 years. And so probably about 3 years ago or so, we started talking about it a little bit more seriously, and we thought, well, what do we want to do? Which direction do we want to go? And there was a couple of big things that we decided. One of them was that we wanted to just make a very sort of, oh, it's a very cliche term, but a very balls to the wall heavy metal album. Just something that's just straight up, no mucking about, and something that people can instantly or very quickly identify with and enjoy. So we needed all the guitar solos, we needed the big choruses, we needed all those classic heavy metal riffs, everything in there, all those key ingredients. And we wanted to take parts of the songs and the elements that people already loved from us, so from previous albums like Set in Stone and Digital Eyes and Ascendance, and even all the Dungeon Era albums as well, finding all the great little parts that have come from our legacy, our history, and try and mash it all together and make this album. So we just wanted this very sort of straightforward heavy metal album, and I think we've done that. I think we've pretty much done that. I don't think we expected that it would come out exactly like this, but I think it's more or less sort of fallen into place where we wanted it to go. But the second thing that we really wanted to do with this album, and I think we've hit it, is that Tim told a story to us about when he was growing up in Broken Hill, and he spoke about the old school mixtape, and he would have these parties, you know, like when we all grow up and we're listening to music, somebody would be in control of the music, you know, and someone would be playing, you know, whatever it is to keep the party going. And so you would have these mixtapes where everyone would put together their favorite songs, but it would be a mixture of everything. It'd be everything from Bon Jovi to Bathory to Creator to Dokken to Slayer to whatever, and it was just this mix mash of just stuff, like all these different bands, but it was all kind of metal, it was all guitar driven music, it was all heavy music in a way. Like, I mean, Bon Jovi maybe a little bit of the exception, but he had even some fairly sort of guitar driven heavy sort of music in places in the 80s, and there was no elitism, there was no subgenres, yeah. There was no sort of, you know, turning the nose up at something, go, oh, you like that music? Oh, you know, what are you? So it was just this love of music. And so Tim's like, I want to do that. I want that energy. I want that excitement where it's that, you don't, it's a good song. Like, a good song's a good song, and that's it. And so we'll bring in all these elements of all the songs, the artists, the bands that we love over the years that we've grown up with, and see if we can create our ultimate mixtape and do it in a way that is not dated, so when you listen to it you don't feel like, oh god, I'm listening to something straight from the 80s, it sounds so out of date. But it's got a modern production, it's got that real sort of fresh, clean sound, very crisp sound, and it can stand up against anything else out there that's being released today. So I think we've sort of done that. I don't think we expected that it would turn out the way that it has, but I think we've, the concepts, all those objectives that we had with the album 3-odd years ago have been fulfilled, and the feedback that we're getting from people so far has been super cool as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot has been said already about the mixtape nature of Fallen Idols, and I'd like to just explore that talking point in a few ways. First up, I'd like to understand, what does an album mean to Lord? Is it a collection of songs, or is it a body of work that's, well, cohesive in some manner? And I'm asking this obviously in the context of what Fallen Idols is.
Absolutely, yeah. I think one of the challenges that we as Lord have had over the years is that we don't stick to one genre. So if people know us and they say, oh, well, they're kind of a power metal band, you know. But if people have listened to a lot of our songs, we've got, you know, we've got the AOR sort of rock ballad in there. We've got the very European power metal song, got the very US power metal song. We've got melodic death metal riffs in there. We've got blast beats. We've got sort of black and thrash riffs and sort of harsher vocals and all sorts. And it's been a challenge for us because people struggle to work out what we're all about. So people that aren't familiar sort of in the past have probably thought, well, it's just this mash of songs that probably don't make sense, you know. Who, do they even know what they are, you know? And so we want to keep doing that because we just love metal. We love everything that's associated. We love rock and metal. We love, like, we just love music. So I think with this album, we still went down that path of bringing in lots of different stuff, and the songs themselves are all individual in the sense that there's no theme to the overall album as such. Like, they don't link into each other and follow a storyline or anything, but they're structured in a way in the album that there's flow. They flow into each other. There's an overall sound that we've developed that when you're listening to it, there's a cohesive flow to the album that people can, it doesn't sound completely sort of uncomfortable when you're listening to it going, oh, what, I don't know where I'm up to. I don't know what's going on with this album. So I think we're starting to finally find that formula that's fitting a lot better than it has in the past. So it is a collection of songs, but we've tried to, I guess, frame it in a way where, going back to that concept of the mixtape, it's like, it's this ultimate mixtape, but it sounds like Lord. And I think that's what we've really tried to work hard on.
Okay. Did the decision to let this be a mixtape type of album free up any constraints on writing songs? As in, now you don't have to have a visible cohesiveness as such, right? Apart from sound and obviously staying true to Lord's level of quality.
I think it did. I think in a way, I think we really wanted to channel that excitement that we all had when we were growing up. I mean, you guys would be in the same position. Like, when we all first got into metal and discovered music, you know, whether it be, like, for me, like a reoccurring story, and you guys have probably heard it in the past, is, you know, when I first saw Fear of the Dark on TV, live at Donington, Iron Maiden, and I couldn't work out what I was watching. I just didn't understand it. My jaw may as well have been on the ground. And I was rewinding it, watching it again, all the people, the chants, the guitars, everything. It was just the most incredible thing. And, you know, getting into other bands like Metallica and Megadeth and all this stuff, and just all these defining moments where you're just like, oh, wow, like, I don't know, like, my life is changing before my eyes. Like, I've never experienced anything like this. And so we wanted that. And so for us, that was basically one of the only rules. It's like, we wanted that energy. And it sort of took the leash off us in the sense that let's throw in riffs and sections of songs that we absolutely love, and, you know, just go in whatever direction works. And we really sort of throw ideas into the melting pot, and if they stick, they stick, and if they don't, they don't. And then once they get through the machine, being the songwriting process and arranging them all, as long as they come out the other end sounding like Lord, then that's the only main rule at the end of the day. So there's a lot of freedom around this album where it was just very exciting to watch it all come together, because we went back to those early days and went, why do we love this music? Why do we love metal so much? And it just brought back a lot of great memories.
How much of a love letter is Fallen Idols to all the idols? And now I can see it when I hear it and say this out loud. Idols, is it because you're looking back at all your collective influences of sorts? You're paying homage to them, tribute to them. I know there are a lot of Easter eggs in this album. It encourages people to go back to your earlier discography, listen through that. It shows off the kind of music that you guys were all into. So how is it right for me to say that this is a collective love letter to everybody or to all the musical influences that Lord has had?
I think in some ways, yes. I think it's a celebration of why we're here. Like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we in this thing called a band? Like, why don't we play music, you know? And it's a very similar story all over the world with people that love metal or play in bands. Like, you're not in it to make money, you know. There's very few of us out there that are making money off heavy metal music. You know, it's probably the most exciting time to be able to do that these days. But you know, we do it because we love it, and so I think there's a lot of reflection in this album where we sort of look back and try to reconnect and understand where we've come from and try to almost recalibrate in a way, sort of look back and go, ah, that's why we do it. You know, that's why we're here, you know. And we've certainly had our ups and downs over the years where we've sort of looked at each other and thought, have we got something better to be doing in our lives? Because this is really tough, you know. These are some really difficult moments that have happened along the way with, you know, broken relationships or, you know, people losing money or just, you know, just tension and opportunities lost or just people getting ignored or whatever it might be. And it's just it's a typical thing that every musician goes through, regardless of being a metal musician or not. But, you know, for us going through this process and now sort of seeing the album out there and people responding to it and also interpreting it their own way, it's a big sort of reflection. So I haven't heard anyone say a love letter, but I love that. I think that's a great way of describing it. And I can certainly see, how that could definitely be the case.
All right. Just continuing on with Fallen Idols. I mean, you mentioned this earlier where this is your first studio album after 6 years. And you did talk about like the last 3 years, but how much of the time was like spent on each song? And how much of time was spent revisiting them? I mean, you know, there is the expectation that, you know, this is your first album after so long. So there would have been some sort of pressure into like perfecting them or is the song ready for release? So could you take us through that process?
Yeah, it's funny because when you're in the moment and when you first have these ideas, you don't expect that, you know, the album will be out in 3 years' time. You sort of, when we make those decisions several years ago, we sort of think, well, okay, so we'll start getting ideas together in the next couple of months, and then maybe by the end of the year we'll have everything ready. Then we'll do a release date in a few months after that, and then, you know, all these different things happen. Life gets in the way. There's delays of all sorts of different reasons, and so we didn't sort of think that the timeline was going to be, you know, 3 odd years. It was just a case that it sort of dragged out, but over that time, because we've had delays and because things stretched out longer than we anticipated, I think it gave everybody more time to sort of really analyze and look at what we had put together. So Tim and Mark were pretty much the primary songwriters on the album. And we've always sort of taken the approach with any of the releases in the past is it's the right tools for the right job. So if somebody's feeling it and they've got the mojo, so to speak, and they're feeling that creative energy, then we let them go. And it just, as long as it comes out Lord, then that's all that matters. But Tim had song ideas in his head. You know, he's a freak when it comes to songwriting. He doesn't record anything. He doesn't write it down anywhere. And he keeps telling us, he goes, oh, I've got this song that's, you know, it's going to be very sort of classic heavy metal riff, very sort of Megadeth-y, you know, Skin of My Teeth style sort of stuff, Countdown era, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, yeah, cool, sounds awesome. And so I'm like, have you got it? Do you want to send me a riff or something? He's like, no, it's in my head. And I'm like, oh, so what, you've just got a riff? He's like, no, I've written the whole song. And I'm like, what do you mean you've written the whole song? And he's like, no, I've got it in my head. And I don't know how he does it. And then eventually, you know, a year later, I forget all about it. And then he sends through a demo that he's whipped up in the studio, and it's this song. And I listen to it and I go, wow, this is this song you were talking about 12 months ago. He's like, yeah. He goes, oh, just this afternoon I decided to just get the guitar out and actually record it. And I'm like, so you've remembered it for at least 12 months. He's like, oh, well, probably 2 years because I've already had it in my head for a year before I told you. And I'm like, what the hell? So he's a freak. And he's always done that. That's his one of his many talents. But Mark stood up for this album and contributed heavily to the album as well. But over the 3 years, the demos have evolved and the arrangements have changed. Little things have been tweaked and sections have been taken out or trimmed and refined. And I think that all of us would agree that we would have preferred the album to be out a lot earlier than what it has, I think in hindsight it's probably worked out in our favour, because I think the songs have had more time to sit, to be polished, so to speak. And I think we sort of got to a point where we've done enough with these songs. I don't think we can polish them anymore. I think we have to let them go, let them get out into the world and let people enjoy them. But I think time sort of worked with us in that sense.
I have to ask you, how did you approach the album sound? And I ask this because each track could have, you know, sounded different because of the kind of tracks they are. And that would have been really a ballsy move to have done that. But how did you guys approach this, just formulating this unifying sound of each instrument and do it to such perfection? Because that's one of the standout things for me on the album. I love the way it sounds.
Well, thank you. And I'm sure Tim would be extremely delighted to hear that, because it was not easy. It was extremely painful. Tim's been engineering, producing our albums almost since day dot. I mean, there's been very few sort of releases over the years where we've had additional people come in and assist in the studio. And Tim has over the years just continuously improved his own skills and expertise and experience. So he's very knowledgeable when it comes to production, and he's had a lot of experience recording other bands now over the past 10 odd years. And he sort of had a bit of an idea of what he wanted to sound like. He wanted to change the guitar tones a little bit from what we've done in the past. And I think also we've sort of lived in this era of compression where mm-hmm. things are like even just the volume levels are just being ridiculous, and you sort of lose definition in these songs. And I think Tim sort of hated that in a way. And it's just been, you know, there's a lot of formula sounds out there with particular producers in the metal world, and particular albums which sound like this producer or sound like that producer. And some of it's great and some of it's not. It's almost very sort of you drop the songs into a template and then they just sound like this production and that's it. So it was a very painful process in the sense that we had that challenge where we had very different songs, but we had to make them sound similar, like in production. They had to have a similar sort of sound, a similar mix, similar production to it. And there's a lot of trial and error. There's a lot of test mixes that were sent out, and so the way that we do it, and I'm not sure if any professionals out there listening to me explain this are going to cringe, but you know, basically what we did is we did test mixes, and then we all sent each other files, and we would listen to these test mixes on every possible device that we could think of. shitty laptop speakers, old desktop speakers, stuff from like 20 years ago, an old classic stereo, car stereos, old ones, new ones, an old boom box, straight off the phone with the speakerphone, through iPhone headphones, everything. And what we're trying to do is work out where people listen to music and where was that balance going to be. So we weren't going to nail just one and then the rest of them are neglected. We had to try and find a way that found that balance across all those mediums, and it was so difficult. A lot of debate where people thought certain things needed to sound a certain way. And I would call them polite debates. We eventually got there. And I'm sure there's a lot more technical aspects to it that Tim would be able to share, which would go right over my head. But I know that we spent a hell of a lot of time trying to work this out, because we knew that very quickly your sound can be dated. I think just the way that everything in our lives, technology, like just the world is changing so rapidly, and it's very hard to keep up. We've got to constantly innovate and get better and better and better. So we had to put something out there that was at least going to last a few years before it sounds dated. So we had to make sure it was real cutting edge and something that was going to cut through that noise and get the responses, like you just said, where that production is something that's noticed, and that's a really great thing to hear.
Yeah, it completely is. I mean, out and out kudos to the band for achieving a master that's really dynamic. It lets the music and the instruments breathe. It's not compressed. It's very well balanced. I'm sure the album must have been a pain to mix and master. I mean, beyond just the songs and how they are, there's so much going on. There are the samples, there are the different vocal styles, there's your bass playing, which is very fucking awesome. there's just so much going on. And I'm sure post-production would have taken a lot of time.
It did. And I mean, one of the other things that's probably worth noting is there is a lot going on in these songs. So as you said, so going back to what I said before, where we wanted to released this album, which was very straightforward heavy metal album, if you listen to it for the first time and you're not paying complete attention to the album, it is what it is. It's very sort of, it's catchy, it's instantly relatable, or very quickly relatable for people. They identify with it and enjoy it. But the more that you listen to it, the more that you start to hear a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of stuff in the mix. And what Tim did, and we'll release them separately later on. I think you can get them on our Bandcamp pages, downloads. But he's done extended mixes of a couple of the songs off the album where he's just changed the mix completely. So he's reduced, always taken out guitars in certain parts and brought out different synths and different sort of backing guitars where there's a bit of lead work that's just lightly sort of working in the background. And it just brings a whole different texture to these songs. So, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen those old classic albums series where they sit in the studio and they start mucking around with the mix and they take the bass out or isolate the bass. And, yeah, and so we like
and
we,
just
we do that, like we do that at Tim's studio for a laugh. We're sitting there and Tim's like, listen to this, I'll take my vocals out and I'll take out the main rhythm guitar and listen to all these things. I'm going, wow, that sounds so cool. He's like, it's all in there. I'm like, how do we hear it all? Like, how's the person who's going to buy the album hear it? And he's like, I don't know, but I'm going to try. So, and we just,
so I must, I have to interrupt. Is that why you have the karaoke version of the album also?
Well, look, I think the part reason, because I think the songs have a different sound altogether when you remove the vocals. No offense to Tim, but there's the Tim's vocals are fantastic, but the songs definitely have a different life when you remove them. And I think it just, there's, look, we in Australia, and it's, and I'm sure it's the same, actually it'd be the same in India for sure. Extreme metal's massive, you know, and and there's amazing bands. Extreme metal in the past, well, you know, the extreme metal bands for the past several decades have been incredible, but in the last probably 10 or so years, the extreme metal scene's just exploded. It's massive. There's so many great bands out there. And for many of us here in Australia, like a lot of other places, our peers all play in death metal bands, in black metal bands, in like sort of, you know, these sort of crossover hardcore metalcore bands, or it just these harder edge bands that sound nothing like us. But you know, we tour with these bands. We have these great relationships with them. And one thing that we've heard from a lot of them over the years is that, oh, we love your music, but it's just the vocals, man. Oh, I just can't do the vocals. And so we laugh, and Tim doesn't take offense. He's like, yeah, I get it. And then we've always joked and said, look, we'll cut a mix for you. We'll take the vocals out and you can just listen to the album without vocals. And we just joke about it. And I think there's a link back to that as well, to do the karaoke thing. But I think what we're hoping with the karaoke songs is that down the track, when we've got a bit of time, is once people get really familiar with the songs, we might try and encourage a few people to do their own versions of vocal work on these songs. And if they feel daring enough, put up a YouTube video of them singing some of our songs just to see what happens, and we might reward them. But I think that karaoke disc could be the gift that keeps on giving. I think there's a lot of fun on that one.
Animesh, I have a perfect idea, a horns up mix.
Love it. You know what will be interesting? You know what will be interesting? Metallica, when they did that, there's that game which you can play in which you have to play a guitar connected into a video game thing, a rock show or something. They released Guitar Hero. They released a lot of songs, and then because they had to release the stems for people to either play the bass or the drums or the guitar, etc., you have like a variety of mixes online of people who've just taken the stems and mixed them in their own way. So you got like And Justice for All completely remastered with the bass, with the bass actually audible on it.
Yeah.
So well, for you guys to release something like that, and then allow people to play around with the mix too. Create your own Lord album.
for sure. And you know what? It's not that crazy of an idea. Tim's spoken about this a lot in the past. I mean, he's a big, like, this is his bread and butter. This is what he breathes. He loves producing, he loves mixing, he's got such an ear for it, and he's spoken about in the past, he's like, we should put a competition out there for people, we'll give them all the stems for an album and just see what they do with it, you know, because we all grew up with those 80s 12 inch extended mixes, yeah, of those classic pop songs, which have got these crazy bass lines and these synths that pop up and it's just these amazing arrangements, and you just listen and go, wow, so it sounds so cool, and the ambience is incredible. And so we've always fantasized about that sort of stuff, and we've done little bits and pieces through our sort of career as a band, so that idea we may actually do it, and now that the album's sort of out of the way, and I think especially when people are talking about the production as well, I think it's probably a really good opportunity to have fun with a lot of that stuff.
You know, coming back just to the album and also your sound, would you say there is a Lord sound, and how would you define it?
Well, I think there is a Lord sound. How I would define it, I have no idea. And this has been, like, even talking about it earlier, like the challenge that we've had with how we're pigeonholed, like how people describe us, is very, very difficult. And so we've almost given up in the sense and just said, hey, we're a metal band, we're a heavy metal band, and that's about it. You know, we're a melodic metal band, which we can't even say that anymore, because we've got a lot of sort of heavier stuff in there that it's not always melodic. But I think it's a very difficult thing. I think maybe Tim would have a better chance of answering it, but I think, yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, I think guitar—it's guitar-driven music, but that's not even a description. I mean, there's a crisp element to our sound where there's a lot of definition in the sound, where each instrument pops, and yeah, I really struggle to define what our sound is. It's a very difficult thing, and it's been a constant challenge for us.
So I think this will be a good time to add. I still remember, like, when we got the promo copy for the album, Animation, and I listened to it separately, and we were comparing notes. And I think Animation will tell this better, but he kind of dropped me a line saying, hey, did you listen to that first song? So I was like, yeah, what about it? Like,
oh, I know where you're going with this.
He's like, listen to that first verse. Doesn't the riff there sound like Meshuggah? And then it just got stuck in my head. And I was like, oh my God, now I can hear Jens Kinman singing over it instead of the high-pitched vocals.
Well, that's incredible, because Peter, you sent me that message, and I laughed so hard, because I don't think any of us I've probably heard a couple of Meshuggah songs, maybe, but the guys in the band, no one would be able to pick out a Meshuggah song. Not that we don't like them, but it's just one of those bands we never got around to really listening to. So to hear that is super cool, because it just shows that the music is evolving without even us having any control over it. You know, we've put our own ingredients into the melting pot, but people are able to identify and hear different things that even we didn't realize were in there. And that's so cool. It's just so, so cool. And I would never, never, ever expect anybody to compare anything that we've ever put out with Meshuggah. So if anybody ever brings up that in conversation, I'll say, hey man, we've got a song that sounds like Meshuggah, so you should check that out. And I'll watch people freak out. So I'm so thankful that you shared that with me, because that's really cool. That really made my day.
Yeah, I think that's one of the highlights of this particular album. It's the fact that every metalhead can listen to it and automatically draw references and kind of just chase various sounds and take it back home in them. And I think that's why this album is resonating so much, because it encourages the fan in you to come out. It's exactly what you guys were setting out to do, which is a backyard party.
Yeah, it's like even all of our friends that like to be ultra serious with their selection of metal, you know, our some of our extreme metal fans who are very elitist and very, very serious, and they'll turn their nose up at particular genres of music because, oh, like, why would you listen to that? All those guys, for the most part, started off with bands like Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and then they progressed from there. Then they discovered more bands after that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But this album, like, for us, I mean, we just wanted people just to, I guess, relax a bit and just remember why they got into music in the first place, why they got into heavy music, and just, be able to identify in their own way, their own story, like where to like throw back those memories and go, oh man, I remember first getting, I remember that energy, that electricity of discovering metal, or even when I first started to discover heavier music, like the more extreme stuff, and go, what the hell is this? This doesn't even, like, I don't even know what I'm listening to, but it sounds so cool. And it's just those feelings that that people are starting to identify from the album. And yes, like some of it was like we wanted some of this stuff to happen, but you never know until it's out there and until people are listening to it. And to hear you guys sort of say that as well just validates a lot of that, which is it's awesome. It's really, really cool to know.
Right. One more thing about the album is, you know, you did mention there was an earlier release date planned, but you worked that very well. And you've, if I may say, put out a great release strategy where, you know, you had the T-shirt put out, you had the single put out initially, and then you kind of built a buzz around it. And then you had people get the album at the shows itself. Was there any other kind of move? How did you kind of work that around? Of course, the most obvious being the change in date.
Like, I think there's a lot of things that were unpredictable. Like, we didn't know what was happening, and there's a lot of frustration earlier this year about what was going on. And there's a constant state of not panic, but we're just scrambling all the time. Just like, we felt like we're chasing our tails. But we always, I think each point along the way, we sort of just looked at it and thought, what can we do to make the most of the situation that we're in? Like, sometimes we can't control what happens. Like, you know, people don't get back to us, or there's delays, or something happens, someone lets us down. But, you know, we still have things that we can do. And instead of sitting there and complaining about it, what can we do to make the most of the situation? And so we decided, like, let's drip feed things out. Let's tease things. Let's give people a taste of where the album's going. Let's get people excited and start to build hype. Even though we don't know exactly when this album's coming out, let's just try to create some momentum and get it going. And those ideas of things like selling the album before the release date at the shows, I mean, there was a bit of risk there because we didn't want it out there on torrents, and we just had to cross our fingers and trust our friends that were coming out to these shows that they weren't going to go and upload it straight to a torrent when they got home. And and we were lucky it didn't happen from what I could see. Mind you, release date within about 2 hours, they were all over South American and Russian torrents, but that's another story. But it's, you know, it was something that in the moment we sort of thought, we've got a tour coming up, we need a product, we need to sell merchandise, we need to recoup some of our money, but we also need to build this momentum and this hype. So what do we do? Like, what are the possibilities? And so you start to think in an unorthodox approach where you go, well, bands don't normally do this, but why can't we? And so you start to ask these questions, and the more you ask the questions, the more you start to realize that sometimes you make decisions without thinking them through, and then you realize that there's actually a lot of great opportunities that you can do with what you've got. And, you know, some of it wasn't terribly glamorous. I mean, you know, we did the shows and we sold the CDs and the merchandise and everything, but a lot of it was us getting on social media and direct messaging our friends that we've known for years. I've got an old Excel spreadsheet that's about 10 years old that I've dumped email addresses in from old orders from, you know, different versions of our online stores that I've just managed to keep all the data from, and reach out to these people and reconnect with them. You know, people from like right around the time that we changed from Dungeon to Lord. And just saying, hey, you know, if you're interested, we're just about to release an album. You can pre-order it and blah, blah, blah. Let us know if you need any help or whatever, if you've got any questions. And it was painstaking, tedious work, but it helped drive those sales. It helped drive the hype, and people felt like they were a part of it because we were connecting directly with people. We weren't just relying solely on like a PR firm or, you know, a label or whatever to do our marketing. We just took a grassroots approach and thought, let's just say hello to as many people as possible. And it's worked really well. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, getting into the Australian art album charts. That was through a self-release, completely independent, you know, no distribution in record stores in Australia. We sold it directly from our online store and it shows. We did it without any big PR budget or anything like that, no mainstream radio whatsoever. Even some of the mainstream radio stations that play metal, for whatever reason, I have no idea why, have not played any Lord. And I don't know what the go is there, but that's another story. But without all of that stuff, and we got into the charts. And so we just looked at each other and went, we can do this. This is super cool. Like, the possibilities are endless. And because we were forced into a corner at times, we were forced to be creative. We had to think outside the box because we kind of had no choice. We either crash and burn, or we try and salvage and make the most of the situation. And I think we've done a really good job with what we've got. And I'm kind of glad that it was a complete mess, because I don't know if we would have got the same results if things ran completely smoothly.
And I must add about the charts, which I didn't mention earlier, is that you guys are two places below my son's favorite band, which is the Wiggles.
Yeah, that's pretty surreal. I never thought ever in my life that I'd be on the same charts as the Wiggles. But I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that.
All right. So, Andy, we've spoken a lot about Fallen Idols. We'd like to play a track from the album on the pod. Which one should we play and why?
Oh, good question. I mean, one of the coolest things that I've seen so far over the past week, in particular after the album's come out, is that everybody has a different favorite song. There's no, like, in the past, it might be just one or two songs that everybody's put all their attention on. But this album, like, every song is getting referenced, and it's amazing. So I could go in so many different directions, but I think for me, probably one of the coolest songs that I like, because we've started playing it live on the tour, and it's a very sort of straight up heavy metal song, so to speak, using air quotes, is Kill or Be Killed. I think it's very Judas Priest. People will listen to that. Oh my God. Like, they're total priest. They're doing total priest worship here. And we're unashamed to do so. And it's just this really heavy riff. It's got this gang vocal chorus. It's just really, really cool. It's a bit of a cheesy whoa section in the middle of it. And it's just old school heavy metal, and I really love it. So let's do that one.
Oh!
Andy, we've spoken a lot about, you know, the album. Let's have some fun now. I know you did talk a little bit about this earlier, but take us back to your roots, man. How did Andy become a metalhead?
Oh, man. So I mean, I got into music like a lot of people. You know, you just listen to whatever's on the radio. You know, I had a compilation cassette tape, like the best of the best 92, that had a bunch of pop artists on it. And I think it had Salt and Pepper's Let's Talk About Sex and Billy Ray Cyrus, Achy Breaky Heart, like disgusting songs on there. But, you know, there was like Mr. Big and a few rock songs and U2 and whatever. And so that's, I think it's similar to a lot of other people. You just listen to like catchy songs, pop songs and all that. And it wasn't until, because I don't have any older brothers or sisters or anything. No one that I sort of was a hammy, it was no hand-me-down music. I sort of had to discover it myself. So it wasn't until I was in early high school where kids started to bring music to school and they had older brothers and or sisters and would be sharing music. So some of those first bands were bands like, you know, it was more punk stuff. It was like Offspring and Pennywise and bands like that. And so that was kind of cool. Like, you know, Offspring sort of had these sort of metallic kind of riffs and they were really fast and sort of high energy sort of stuff. And I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. Like it's very, very sort of intense sort of music. And then someone gave me a really crappy dubbed cassette of And Justice for All. And I didn't know what the hell I was listening to. Initially, I listened to it and I thought, I don't think I like this. Like, I just couldn't wrap my head around. The only song that I kind of liked was One, which, you know, there's no surprise there because that ended up being, like, that was their single. But the songs were long. You know, the mix was obviously very different to what Offspring was doing. There's no bass on it, that's right. And
it's one of my biggest
oh man, but at the time, like, it was I mean, I didn't know what I was listening to. I didn't really even know what bass was at the time, but it sounded different. It was different. I didn't know if I liked it. It had a completely different sound to what I was listening to beforehand. But after a while, it was just this vibe that I got from that album. It was dark. It was moody. It was angry. And I realized how complicated the songs were. There was just so many different sections and I couldn't remember what had happened beforehand and what was coming next. And I became obsessed with it. Like the title track, like, you know, that song and the twists and turns on that song are just so cool, and the way that it just sort of wraps around and comes back to square one at the end of that song, and, you know, and then songs later in the track like Freight Ends of Sanity and Dyer's Eve and all that. And it was this angsty, heavy, dark, moody album, and I was like, whoa, I think I get it now. I think I get it. And then I just started to dig in a bit deeper. So I was like, oh, have you got any more of that Metallica band? You know, I didn't know who they were. I even thought they were Australian because I had no idea. I didn't even know bands. I had no clue about music at all. And so eventually I started to hear more and more and slowly began to become obsessed, you know, obsessed with Metallica to begin with. I had a Metallica website when I was in high school. I had a GeoCities Metallica website, which I had just a bunch of photos of James Hetfield on there, and it was just the cheesiest, dumbest thing in the world. But, you know, I loved it. I loved Metallica. I was just so into it. But, you know, then the taste expanded, you know. I discovered what the big four were, and then I started to discover what European metal was and all the British heavy metal, and it just became this, oh my god, like I'm going down a rabbit hole here. There's so many things to listen to. I don't have enough time in the day, and I just never looked back after that. And over the years I've certainly embraced lots of different styles of music and found lots of other really cool things out there, but metal's just been this incredible thing that's been life-changing for me. It's made me the person I am today, and the friendships that I have, you know, the experiences, the travel around the world, the relationships I've forged, it's been incredible, man. It's been very cool. Right from that really crappy dubbed Injustice for All cassette to now, it's been a big journey.
I'm actually surprised you didn't mention Akka Dakka at all.
well, the funny thing with AC/DC is that AC/DC was one of those bands that it's I mean, they were so popular. They were part of like the lifestyle here in Australia. Like they were played on the radio. They were almost national anthems. You know, they were just songs that everybody knew, and you sort of just took them for granted. They weren't even like. It's a weird thing to explain, because when you hear something so much, you sort of lose track of what it is. Like when you hear your favorite album over and over and over again, you lose the essence of it, and you have to leave it sit for a few years and then come back to it and you go, oh, that's right, I remember why I like it. And I think AC/DC were one of those bands where they were just so ingrained in culturally in our society. They were just mainstream radio, it was on the TV, they were in TV ads, the music in the background, and they were just these anthems that were part of our culture here. So I think they were probably indirectly influenced a lot of my love for music. But it wasn't until I really dug in deep into metal that I went back and, you know, I think it might have been AC/DC, it might have been their No Bull live show on, it was on VHS, and I bought it, and I paid like $40 Australian for it. It was just ridiculous. So like to pay anything more than a dollar for a VHS these days is like crazy. But back then you're paying like, you know, premium price for this. And I remember sitting at home, and I think that was recorded in Madrid in like 96 or something like that, or whatever, Ballbreaker Tour or something like that. And it was just, I remember watching that going, oh, wow, now I get why AC/DC is the band that everybody talks about, and why so many metal, like my metal heroes, reference AC/DC as being these inspirational musicians, these groundbreaking artists that just changed the world for so many guitarists out there. So it sort of clicked later on, but it was just a weird band that is just so ingrained into Aussie culture that you sort of just go, oh, yeah, like, I know. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll and all that sort of stuff, you know, or TNT or Dirty Deeds, Thunder, Cheap. Like, I knew the words before I even knew exactly what I was singing. So it was just it was very, very weird, but definitely an iconic band that deserves a hell of a lot of credit.
So just a quick thing, because you talked about, you know, GeoCities. That's what I want to say. how were you kind of, like, consuming, or what was your form of like discovery music? I know you talked about, you know, your peers in high school and stuff like that, but just for us, like, because Animesh and I talked about it a lot, and we keep talking about it, how we discovered music here in India. So I'm just very curious about how you were discovering music in Australia back then.
Well, I think before the internet sort of really kicked off, I mean, the internet was massive. I mean, I think it was a game changer for so many people. Yeah. But the tapes were a big thing. People, like, we just started to get CD burners, which were ultra expensive, so only a few people had them, and you had to pay so much money for those blank discs. So one person in our class would be making all this money, because they'd charge people, like, you know, a couple of dollars a disc or whatever. And it's like, oh, what songs do you want? And then they try to, you know, burn them off another CD or whatever. They get their brother's collection. Or when, you know, Napster hit, then it was like next level. It was crazy. One of the things that sort of really defined sort of my discovery of music was like the internet, where it sort of really, I started to get into the depths of metal, like into a lot of the subgenres, deep into the sort of the North American and European scenes. And I remember, like, yeah, websites like these GeoCities or Angel Fire, like really disgusting looking websites had these horrible hyperlinks and just these crazy GIFs and everything. And they had like there were uploaded MP3s to like through an FTP server or whatever. And it was just a random mix of songs. And it was like stuff like Fear Factory, Bolt Thrower, Agalloch was in there. I'm trying to think of some other stuff. This is like right at the tail end of the 90s, like 99 or something like that. I was sort of halfway through high school. And even stuff like Iced Earth and Nevermore and all that. And so I just thought, oh, I've never heard of any of these bands, but I've got the internet now and it doesn't cost me anything, so I'm just going to download these songs. And I burnt them all to a CD and just started listening to them. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, what is this? And it was just this another chapter in my life where I like just got a little bit deeper than I was before when it came to heavy music. And then it just continued to open up that rabbit hole where you just continue to discover more and more music. But, you know, I also, going back a little bit, you know, you go to the record store. Like, we were really lucky. I grew up in Brisbane and we had some really amazing record stores back in the day where a lot of secondhand vinyl, and you just go in there and I would just buy vinyl based on the album cover. I had no idea what the music sounded like. So I bought Saxon's Rock the Nations because the album cover looks so cool. And in hindsight, there was only about two or three decent songs on that album. There's some shocking songs on that album. But the album artwork was incredible. I mean, I remember buying Labyrinth's Return to Heaven Denied for $2 in one of these record stores on CD, and it was just in this bargain bin because no one, who the hell in Brisbane would know an Italian power metal band? And so here I am just sticking through because I'm cheap and I'm buying all these cheap CDs, and I go, Labyrinth, oh, that sounds a bit wanky. Oh, I'll get it anyway. And I went home and listened to it and went, oh my God, this is really cool. And so there was a lot of that as well, which was super exciting because it was just this discovery. It was like, you know, the Indiana Jones of music, where you're just diving into these labyrinths of music and treasures and hunting for the gold and these little rare items. And it's just a really fantastic time.
Just to kind of fast forward things a bit, you currently play also the role of tour manager, social media guru for the band. And you talked a bit about the internet and, you know, how it had an impact on your life, discovering metal. What would you say would be the impact of social media on your life and also on the life of Lord?
I think that social media is one of those hot topics where you've got people on both sides of the fence. There's the people out there that say it's the worst thing that's ever happened because it's removed people from society and from normal interaction and human interaction. People are addicted and get stuck into their phones and all that. And also, you know, fabricating their lives, putting like Instagram, you know, putting the best parts of their life or making their lives look more exciting than it really is. And there's a lot of reality around that. But I think it's like we said before, like you make the most of what you've got. And I think we've looked at social media and just seen the opportunities. And we've seen how people have used it badly, and we've seen how people have used it in incredibly valuable ways. And so for us, we've realized that we've always been a band that connects directly with the fan, which we call our friends, these people that support us through thick and thin, and it's a great way to keep in constant contact with them. You know, we'll do our best to try and respond or acknowledge every message that possibly pops up on any of the platforms. You know, we're constantly interacting with these people, and I think that's a very important thing to do, because if people feel like they're being heard and they feel like they're being acknowledged, then they support you. They want to be a part of what you do. I mean, for us, we always say, and it's very cliched, it's very cheesy to say, but the band is bigger than us in the band. Like, the band is us plus everybody that's associated with this. It's you guys that are talking to me right now because you're contributing to us. You're an extension of the band. It's this larger network of people that all make up Lord and what Lord does and where Lord goes. So social media has been this amazing tool that we've done our best to take advantage of, and we're constantly trying to find ways to get better at doing it. So it can be very dangerous at times, and it can be, I mean, if you ask that same question to my wife might turn around and say that I am on my phone way too much and I might have a problem. but if you ask the guys in the band, they say, oh, thank goodness Andy loves to use social media, because we'd probably be stuffed without it. So it's a great thing, and I think there's a lot of benefits, and I think you just got to use it smart, and you got to be healthy with it as well, because I think that's a big topic now is people's health, mental health, when it comes to this stuff. These platforms are built in a way that feeds into people's addictive personalities, and that's a scary thing. But I think when you've got self-awareness, it's like anything in life, you know, you're at your own mercy and your own habits and your own tendencies. And if you've got self-awareness, then you can mitigate and you can manage these things properly. It's like alcohol and cigarettes and all these other things out there. Everything's dangerous if you use it in the wrong way. So social media is another one of those things, but you can definitely make the most of it. So it's helped a lot with the band. It's helped a lot with the album, obviously with this album. It's helped with the tour. It's helped with connecting with people like you guys. You know, who would have thought, you know, our, like, the connections that I have with so many of you guys in India over the years is just crazy. Like, I never would have thought of that, you know, and to have those relationships with, you know, so many guys like Sahil and, you know, Riju and all those guys, you know, bringing Albatross out to Australia several years ago as well. And they're just all these crazy things. And it's just, it's social media. It's the internet. It's that connectivity, which is just, it's amazing.
So I'm just plain curious now. How much time do you spend on social media in a day? And would you say are you consumed by it?
Well, I look. It depends on the time of the day. Some days I would tell you that I'm absolutely not consumed by it, and other days I'd probably be on the verge of having a mental breakdown because I've had my face on my phone too much. But I've used. I'm sure you guys have seen it. You know how you can track your usage on your phone if you've got an iPhone.
Yeah.
So I've started using that, and it starts to track my usage. And I've actually, because I'm a bit of a stat freak, I love looking at stats and analytics. So I've now sort of found a way of motivating myself to reduce my screen time. So it'll say, you know, you've reduced your screen time by 15% on last week. And I'm like, yes, as long as I'm going down, it's good. You know, and it sort of makes me more intentional. Like, I find that I'm not scrolling mindlessly through Facebook or Instagram feeds now. If I get on these platforms, I go for a particular purpose, I get the job done, and I move on. And there's a thing in, I don't know if it's on Facebook, but I know on Instagram there's a little alert that you can put on for your activity, and you can limit your activity per day. And I started like crazy. I had like an hour a day, and I'm like, oh my God, an hour a day? Are you serious? And then gradually I brought it down 55 minutes, 50 minutes, 45 minutes. And I think I've got it down to like 20 minutes now. And even that's excessive. So, you know, it's a work in progress, but like anybody, like, we get sucked into it, and they're very smart people, these developers, because they feed into these tendencies. We all want to be acknowledged. We all want that interaction, and we want that connection with people. And when you get those little notifications, there's that little dopamine hit, and you go, oh, someone likes me. Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, what are they going to say about me? So it's, I think it does consume me at times, and it's always a constant work in progress.
So, all right, this is, I think, the last question we have on social media, but it's a little different one. So, you know, day by day, there's a new platform coming. There's TikTok, which is the new buzz, and everyone's kind of trying to figure it out and things like that. What are your tips or advice that you have for upcoming bands on social media usage, or how they should use these platforms?
I think, look, there's a couple of ways of approaching it, because there's several opinions of, you know, when it comes to bands. Because I think, for me, I've always taken the approach of a blanket approach. I think there should be some form of presence on as many platforms as possible, but you always have your primary platforms. So for us, I mean, the main ones are Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I mean, more so probably Facebook than anything else, than Instagram, than Twitter. But we've got profiles on a lot of these places, and I do need to go back and probably update a lot of this stuff, because it's probably old and completely out of date. But I think it's good to have something on all these profiles, and to try and make the information on there as timeless as possible. So the platforms that you're using the most, then you obviously keep it quite relevant and up to date. But anything else that you're not using often, but you just want a little bit of presence, I think you just create almost like a little thumbprint, you know, just to say, hey, we exist, here's a couple of songs, and then some links back to your main website, which is your portal page, where you continuously update that. And I think that's a very smart way of doing it, because you just never know. There'll be those TikTok users out there, which I haven't even looked at yet. I mean, I'm so behind the eight ball at the moment. But I know of it, everyone's talking about it. I've got to find some time. But, you know, there'll be TikTok users, there'll be Snapchat users, there'll be, you know, all these, like Periscope and all these different ones that have come and gone over the years. And, you know, there'll be particular people that are just on those platforms alone, and they may never know that you exist. But if you've got a profile in there, then maybe you might connect with one of them. And you only need one person who decides to become a diehard, buy everything that you've got, or tell the person that they know, their friend, who then tells somebody else, and you've got that chain reaction. So I think you shouldn't panic about trying to keep every platform up to date, but I think you should have something on there, some form of portfolio of a couple of songs or whatever, just to make sure that people know that you are a real thing. And you could be constantly chasing your tail with all these platforms.
That's really sound advice. I'd like now to talk to Andy Dowling, the podcaster. Can I have Andy Dowling, the podcaster, on, please?
You have Andy Dowling, the podcaster, here.
All right. Andy, what happens when millennials have a meaningful conversation? The answer, a new podcast is born. What happens when a millennial has an opinion? The answer, a new podcast is born. So the question to you, how chuffed or bummed are you to see the podcast explosion happening right now?
I love it. Look, I'm actually quite pumped. I think it's, there's a, like anything, when something's exciting and flavor of the month and people think it's a good idea, then everybody jumps on, everybody jumps on that bandwagon and you get a lot of crap. There's a lot of noise out there and it makes it harder for people to discover stuff. It makes it harder to cut through the noise. There's a lot more competition in the sense that there's a lot of noise to get through. But looking at it from like a glass half full, like with a bit of more optimistic view on it, it's exciting to see so many people out there just expressing themselves. So I think, social media does a good job of that in some cases, but I think there's something really cool about voice, like being able to talk, and for people to be able to sit down and listen into a conversation and just hear people talk freely. I think it's just super cool. Even if it's just rubbish that people are saying and it's just absolute dribble that's coming out of their mouth, it's still something that's quite liberating. And I think there's something to be said about the free exchange of ideas and people being able to say what they want. And, there's consequences, of course. If people are saying stupid stuff, then, they'll cop it. But I think it's just a very exciting time. And for me, I try to encourage as many people to start their own. I think you can have the most intelligent podcast in the world or you can have the dumbest podcast in the world. It doesn't matter. I think people learn a lot about themselves, and I'm sure you guys have gotten better as communicators, the way that you talk to people, because you've had to sort of learn, how to talk to people in this particular format and watch conversation go and move and adapt and not just have a very stock standard Q&A type structure. I've personally, it's been a massive self-development tool for me. So I would say that I'm pumped more so than frustrated with it.
Thank you.
Right. So, we've talked quite a bit and I want to just wrap up with a few things. And again, I want to talk to Andy, the podcaster, because one thing you might have noticed if you've been keeping your eye on the Indian scene is there's one particular Australian band that is massively popular here, and that's Carnival. Apart from AC/DC is Carnival, because they just played here so many times and they had their label do a lot of push and stuff like that. So for all our Indian listeners and of course other listeners around the world, which are the other Australian artists that we should be paying attention to or keeping an eye out for?
Oh man, yeah. I think a really cool thing at the moment is that I don't think people realize in Australia, but I think we're going through a bit of a golden era for music. I think we've got a lot of iconic bands from the 70s and the 80s, and even the early 90s in Australia that are just amazing bands that are internationally recognized. But I think we're going through a period now, especially with metal, where a lot of metal bands are getting out of Australia. They're getting signed to large labels in Europe, and they're doing European, North American tours. They're traveling through Asia. Bands are even coming out to you guys in India, and that's all opening up, and it's super cool. There's heaps of bands doing amazing things. I mean, some of the more recent stuff, and you guys will know these bands, but Viator's Murder released their album last week as well. They beat us on number one for the independent charts. We were number two, so fair call. I can't argue with that one. They're massive. Disentombed from Brisbane. They're fantastic. Sort of just absolute brutal death metal. I think they use the word sloom, which I'm still like, I sound like such an old man, 'cause I'm like, I don't understand these terms, but they're awesome. They're just incredible musicians. Then you got the other end of the spectrum. You got Voyager from Perth, who are just like this progressive sort of you know, metal, but also this progressive rock band that are just doing amazing things and really making a lot of headway in Europe in particular and also North America. There's a lot of classic metal bands. Espionage from Melbourne are really cool. They just did Headbangers Open Air in Germany. Hidden Intent from Adelaide, they're a thrash metal band, very old school, very Metallica-esque in a way. They just played that same festival as well. We've got Lagerstein, which is just the ultimate cheesy pirate metal band that just love drinking beer out of shoes. They've just been living in Europe for the last 6 months, and they've I think they've just released their album, and they played Wacken. I'm just trying to think of heaps of Trollhagen, which are very sort of eclectic mixture of metal and rock and bits of Mr. Bungle and all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff. Toe Hider, which are a bit more rock. There's just so many bands. And then obviously we've got all our classics. Psychroptic is still there. They're still going amazing. King Parrot are doing amazing things as well. It's a really, really exciting time. And I think everybody, like all of our peers, all of our friends that play in bands, and we've all been sort of playing shows together for decades, we're all looking at each other at the moment going, I think something's happening. I think good things are happening at the moment. Yeah, I think they really are. So it's cool. It's exciting to see where it's all going. So a great thing about this album, and I've said this a few times over the past week, is I'd like to think, and without sort of blowing our own horn, so to speak, I would like to think that this album is putting not only a spotlight just back on heavy metal and celebrating heavy metal and just what we all love about it, but it's also just putting a spotlight back on Australian metal. It's hopefully just bringing more attention that's already there towards us in our country to say, oh, that Lord band's pretty cool. Like, that album's really good. What else is there? You know, and hopefully through us, they discover this mountain of amazing talent in this country. And I hope that we can help contribute in a way of bringing further awareness to our country and our bands. So I actually put together a Spotify playlist. I think you guys might already have it, but I'll give you a link. But it's got about a couple hundred, Australian metal bands in there. So there's a lot of new stuff, there's old stuff, but it's just like bands that just, you know, have been doing amazing things over the past several decades. And I'm a big supporter of metal in this country, and I just hope it continues on.
Yeah, I'm actually already following it, so I'll definitely add
there you
that
go.
Awesome. To the show.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be doing that. So when are Lord coming to India? When do we see you guys here?
Oh, man.
I know there'll be at least a dozen fans, and I know who's going to be in the support already.
Well,
hey, if you come to Bombay, we'll just host you guys.
We've had a couple of really interesting offers over the years to come over to India, and it's usually been like those university festivals.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're very weird. Like, man, they're you start to look at what they're trying to propose, it just looks so unorganized, and you think, I've got a feeling I'm going to end up in some random airport in India without a connecting flight and just sitting there going, how do we get home? So we haven't taken up any of those offers, but I mean, I think India's one of those places that we'd love to play. And I think it's like anywhere in the world. If we can find the right people to work with, and we can make it work that makes sense for whoever's helping us in India, but also us as well, then we're all for it, man. Like, I'm personally so desperate to get over there and play. There's so many people I've forged friendships with, even if it's just online, like digital relationships over the internet. But, you know, some of the guys, you know, have been lucky to meet in person over the years as well. And I'd just love to connect in person or reconnect and have a couple of, what do you guys have, Kingfisher beers?
Yeah.
have a couple of them. I don't know how good they are, but I'll have a couple of them and play a bit of metal for you guys. I'd love to come over there. So hopefully we can find the right people and hopefully make it happen soon.
Just, I think this is probably our last question, but what's next for Lord? What do you guys have, another tour planned, a string of shows, one-off shows, probably tour abroad? I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I think sort of over the next couple of months, we're just going to go hard with the promotions of the album. So we're doing a lot of marketing, a lot of PR stuff, a lot of that continued grassroots approach where we're just getting a lot of people power behind us. We're going to do some more video clips. So there's more video clips coming soon. I've actually got, speaking of podcasts, I've got another podcast series that's going to be I can't really talk about it too much because I haven't finished it off yet, but hopefully within the month it'll be released. But it's going to be a bit of an extension of the album. It's going to be a way of promoting the album in a very unique way, but a very short podcast series that I think people are going to be really excited about, especially metal fans. So I won't be able to say too much more, but that's one of the things. And the touring will kick back off again probably in the new year, unless we get some amazing support, some amazing band comes along and says, "Hey, Lord, do you want to play with us?" And we go, "Yes, please." Apart from that, we probably won't get back out until early in 2020. And the way that we're sort of approaching this album is we're not going to do 6 years, but we're going to drag this out a little bit. We really want to give this album plenty of time to reach as many people as possible. We're going to do as many video clips as possible. We're going to try and find lots of different ways to continue to highlight every single song on this album and connect with lots and lots of different people. So from the social media point of view, hopefully people will be able to see lots of interesting things that we try. Some things will work, some things will fail, but we are going to just have a lot of fun with this album and just celebrate it for as long as we can without boring people, of course. We'll keep it interesting.
That sounds like a plan.
All right, Lord Andy. It's been great chatting with you for the past hour or so, and I'm so glad you could take time out to do this with us.
Oh, guys, thank you so much for having me. And I've been listening to your podcast since it launched. I love what you guys are doing, and I'm just hoping that you guys continue to have success. And it's just it's a pleasure to be on this podcast with so many amazing artists that you've already had on, and great to actually have a really good conversation with you guys.
Well, I think after listening to that, it's time to subscribe. So go over to your Apple Podcast Player or Stitcher or Spotify or Overcast or whatever the hell you listen to podcasts through and find the Horns Up podcast and subscribe to it. I'll put some links in the show notes just to make it a little bit easier. So if you're using your podcast player and there's clickable links in there, then hopefully you'll be able to click through and just find their podcast straight away. But they're great guys. As you would have heard, they've got a great sense of humor. They're really, really lovely guys. And I've had just an absolute ball reconnecting with them in a way, but also just getting to have this chat, and it was just fantastic. And any excuse for me to waffle on, I'm there. So make sure you connect with them, let them know what you thought of this particular chat, but go back and have a listen to some of their other episodes. They have had some really great guests on, and I feel extremely honored to be a part of their growing list as well as their podcast continues to get bigger and better. So thank you very much, guys. I appreciate that. All right, before we wrap it up, the album Fallen Idols, plug, 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 spam, spam, spam. I am going to just say that I am terribly sorry. I'm terribly sorry for everybody that is getting punished by my direct messages, my social media posts, my MailChimp mailouts to everybody. Sorry, now hang on, pause. Not from my Andy Social or Andy Dowling mailouts. That's still coming. I'm aware, and I've had a few people actually message me. Andrew Shrug, I believe, has left a message. Shrug, I hope I got your surname right. I haven't got it in front of me. Has left a post on my Facebook page giving me a bit of grief about it. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. But going back, I apologize for the punishing campaign that I've been putting out for the past several months, really, but especially in the past several weeks. I am going hard at the moment. I am direct messaging almost everybody that has liked our Facebook page and offering them little deals. And I'm just hustling. I'm going Gary Vaynerchuk style, and I'm not letting up. And we're riding the momentum off this album. As you guys are aware, it debuted at number 20 in the ARIA charts for Australian artists. It debuted at number 2 for the Australian independent charts. And we are just continuing to move ahead and keep that momentum going. So there's a lot of great stuff happening. We just put out, at the time of this episode coming out, about a week ago, we put out our second video clip for Kill or Be Killed. And that comprises of a lot of footage that a lot of our friends that came out to shows took on their phones and their cameras, and we compiled it, made a video clip out of it, and Tim did a really good job putting that video together. So that's available now. Please go and share it around. If you know somebody that loves a bit of old school metal, especially with Kill or Be Killed, it's total priest worship in a way. So if you know any priest fans or anybody that just loves classic old school heavy metal, please tag them in the video posts or share it on their walls or do a bit of social media love. It means a hell of a lot to us. Spotify, all that sort of stuff is going really well. So please share those links around, especially to your tight ass mates who don't want to buy music anymore. I'm not offended. As long as the music's getting listened to, that's all I care about. So thank you so much to everybody that's been going hard, getting it out there and helping us. And once again, and I kind of sincerely mean it, but at the same time, I kind of don't. I apologize for punishing you all with all of my social media marketing, using air quotes. Now, Self-Starter, selfstarter.com.au, season 2 is underway. I have a bunch of great episodes coming up, so make sure you keep in the loop with that. If you know anybody out there that needs a kick up the ass or wants to get a bit of reassurance, they're already in the self-employment game themselves, go and refer them to selfstarter.com.au or search for Self-Starter in your podcast player as well. Season 2 will run up into the end of December. And then, well, I'll just make a judgment call as to what I do after that. So I have definitely been pushing the limits this year. So I've still got a number of things that are on my list, and as I've been moving into my new place back in Sydney, I've been writing out, like, it looks like chicken scratch on a piece of paper, all the things that I need to do before the end of the year and all the things I actually probably need to do within the week. So there's a lot of stuff happening, but it's fun. I'm enjoying it. I can't complain at all. But at the end of the year, I will make a decision as to what I do with Self-Starter. If any of you guys have got suggestions as to how Self-Starter could be better or be improved or have some tweaks or changes or anything that could make it sustainable long-term, it's not so much that it's more about the time that I'm investing into it. I'm really enjoying it. It's great. But what I'm finding is that I'm not able to allocate the amount of time that I would like to allocate to Self-Starter compared to everything else that I'm doing in my life. So if you've got any suggestions, I'm more than happy to also get people on board. If anyone's passionate about this sort of stuff and wants to sort of, you know, work with me, get in contact. I'm all ears. I would love to hear suggestions from people and see what happens. I'd hate for it to be sort of put on hiatus or anything like that. I love momentum. I love things to continue on, but I've also got to be realistic as well. So until then, I'm sorry, going off on a tangent, continue to listen and enjoy the season 2 of Self-Starter. It's going to be up and running until the end of December, and then we'll go from there. But yeah, reach out if you've got any ideas. I think that's about it. Yes, as I mentioned before, mailing lists will come eventually, and I've got another podcast series that's coming. It's a very short podcast series. It's not going to be an ongoing thing, so I'm not overcommitting myself. And the podcast videos are out there. Actually, funny enough, I've had a handful of people message me in the last week asking me my advice as to how to start a podcast. And you know what, folks? I tell you what, I can't even describe the feeling I had when I just copied part one of my video series and just pasted it into that Facebook Messenger or Instagram DM and just said, here, check this out, and just watch them go, oh, shit, awesome. So it works. Yes, it finally works. So it's so good. So there you go. So go and check it out. If you want to start a podcast, go and check out the podcast series. I think it's called Getting Into Podcasts. You can just search for me on YouTube, or if you go to my Facebook page and click on the video tab, you'll see all the videos. There's 11 videos. They're roughly about two and a half minutes each, and it's just the basics, just to get you started, get your mind thinking along those lines of what you may have to consider when starting your own podcast. But please message me if you have any extra questions or you want me to sort of give you some advice or whatever it might be. I'm happy to guide people and get people started. I've crapped on before about it, but the more people out there doing podcasts, the better. So go and check it all out and share it around with some mates as well. And yeah, that's enough. I've had enough. So next week, I will stop cheating. I'll have some actual guests on. I've got some really cool people coming up, some more musos, some people that work with animals. That's an interesting one. Stay tuned for that one. I'll leave it at that. All right. Until next week, folks, thank you so much. Keep spreading the word. Fallen Idols, Fallen Idols, Fallen Idols, Fallen Idols, Fallen Idols, Fallen Idols, Fallen Idols. Okay. Goodbye. Larry, please.